We're on the air. Yes. 34. Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, so if there's any questions like that, then so details or anything about what we were discussing before, anything specific? I think the traditional phrase is don't everybody ask at once. Yeah, yes.
I have some questions about the girls' training.
About the girls' training, okay.
First, I really didn't know why it's easier for parents to train their own child in regard to a boy, why it's possible for us to teach our own.
Means the girls.
Yes.
Because girls who identify as girls, and so therefore the activities that the mother is doing are the same activities that the girl can be involved in. Right? So there's a similar mentality. So therefore that training of the girls then can be done. As long as, it means, of course, if the mother, how much the mother knows and is practicing, that much is how much you can give. You know, just like for the boys, how much the teachers know, then they can train the boys. That's the general. Does that make sense? Because the home environment is where the girls thrive. See, in the home environment, when they're young, at least as far as understanding higher subject matters and that, the boys don't thrive. Because they have that aspect of just being comfortable in the environment they're in. And so they won't notice. So it's only when you have more of an austere, more monastic kind of environment, then the boys actually pay attention to what's going on, because it's simplified enough that they can see the workings of it. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, you know, they drop the stuff around the room, and then they go out, and when they come back, it's all clean. They don't know. Right? Does that make sense? In fact, most of the adult men don't have an idea what happens. All they know is that there's this pile of dirty clothes and they come back and magically it's clean. Not only is it clean, it's not in the same place. It's like where it's supposed to be. You know, and it's like done according to like color or shape or, you know, something. It's like mystical to them. So therefore, when the boys are in the in the Gurukul environment, then the mystique is removed because they wash their own clothes. Right? They do the work themselves. It's clean because they did it. Their stuff is there on the shelf because they put it there. Right? The girls, they're aware of all this. It's just whether they want to get involved or not. So if the mother explains this and that, then it can be done. It's not that having others giving input doesn't help. But what I'm saying is that the girls can study in the home environment, especially if the training is you know, so much there, and especially if there's more family members. You know, the bigger the family, then the easier it is. Does that make sense? So that's how it works for the girls. Because, see, is generally you see is in the interaction between the mother and father and the children, the father will be very kind to the daughter, the mother very kind to the son. Right? So the mother's going to be strict with the daughter, father with the son. So that's why mothers can't train the sons, but they can train the daughters. Does that make sense? Yeah.
And regarding the subjects, should they be trained in the same things like
boys? They're trained in the same things, just the only thing the Vedas restrict on is chanting of Vedic verses. You know, like Purusha Shukta and that you use for yajnas and things like that. They don't do yajnas. Yeah, that's about it. They become leaders or those who can follow leaders.
And regarding who they get worked, what is there, a special move, or is there
a main thing is training to be a nice devotee. So Prabhupada mentions that in training girls, the main thing is they're learning is cooking and cleaning. Then according to their individual ability and nature and interest, then they'll learn beyond that whatever it is of interest. Why cooking and cleaning, the amazing thing about the cooking is that all people have to eat, right? So then if you know how to cook, then you actually technically have control of everybody, right? Does that make some sense? So, because they all want to eat. They all like to eat. So they're always going to come together. They're always going to do that. Then if there's the aspect of the tradition, of the relationships, then that's the time when you can interact and that. You see in the traditional families, then like in Europe and that, dinner, you have to be there. There's no question of not. It's a formal time. Everyone's there. Everyone sits. Everyone behaves. Does that make sense? And so then has that cleaning, because the mind is born from the mode of goodness. So the mode of goodness means everything's tidy, orderly, done how it's supposed to, done according to religious principles. So therefore, if the environment you're in is clean, the mind will be peaceful. If the mind's peaceful, then everything goes nicely. Because you can't necessarily expect that the men will clean. They can clean, but you can't expect that they will. You can, if you're able to discipline them and train them to, yes. But it's that you have to be able to do that. You understand? So now if they've gone to school, then they know the principle, then the woman just enforces it, then it runs very nicely. So it's very easy to establish. They have no idea about that, then it's going to be a little longer. Does that make sense? And then, so those are just generic. And then after that, then whatever is their particular interest, then that's what it goes. So naturally, language, math, you're going to have to know. Then general knowledge is very, very important. Then beyond that, what they're interested in. Does that make any sense? So basically, it's what you're interested in, that's what you can teach. Right? If you're not interested in it, it may be very difficult for you.
Yeah, there's another aspect as well with cleaning, is that when we think about cleaning, we think about on a small scale, like cleaning your house or things like that, but cleaning, maintenance is in the mode of goodness as well. So when you have to maintain something, it takes a lot of organization, a lot of skill, a lot of cooperation, a lot of ability to control. And the example, of course, is Draupadi, Queen Draupadi. Mm-hmm. She ran the empire, really. She ran the palace. I think, you know, some enormous amount of maid servants, girls and men she was controlling. So unless you understand the detail of cleanliness, you can never expand it out to any level. So there's not just the aspect of, you know, women are taught, you know, cleaning and cooking. There's a lot more deeper element of control and understanding of organization to do with that. That's what popped into my mind.
Mm, yes, yes. Is that okay?
And of course, you know, we like to think that cleaning is something second class or third class, even. But in the spiritual world, when we do eventually get there, we'll. Pretty much that's all we'll be doing.
Yeah, cleaning.
Cleaning and organizing. This paraphernalia, that place, this tray. You know,
Yeah.
And if you know how to clean properly, and if you know how to cook properly, you're appreciated by everybody.
Yeah.
If you don't know, then, you know, men and women, for that matter.
Of course. Yeah, Radharani cooks for Krishna. Like that. In fact, Mother Yashoda invites her there because she's a good cook.
Yeah.
Also, in the cleaning is that then, like before the Rasa dance, they have to sweep the Jamuna beach. They don't just walk in and it's already done. They actually clean it. And it mentions in the Bhagavatam that in Vaikuntha, then all the ladies there, they're in the palace with Lord Vishnu and they're cleaning. They're dusting. Even though there's no dust in Vaikuntha. It's just, it's something they can do for the Lord, be there with the Lord. So the Lord appreciates the clean environment. Because He is Pavitra. He is the original pure. He is the original purifier. So therefore that endeavor to make things pure and all that, the Lord likes that very much. So like Prabhu said, is we tend to drop it into a lower thing because anybody can clean. Well, but yeah. Take it from me. Very few can clean.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I mean, really, literally, very few know how to clean. It's that thing. And the point is the ones that can clean are generally the ones that are more qualified, more intelligent, more observant, have more focus, more determination. They can actually clean.
Organized.
Because to clean, like you said, maintenance is only done by Lord Vishnu because that's the hardest one to do. So that's why then you also see the Gurukul then for the boys, menial service is one of the main points of training. Like in different places, Prabhupada will say brahmachari means student, celibate student. Other places will say it means menial servant. So that's the principle. Because if you can do that, then you can, as an adult, then do so many things and organize and that. If you can't clean, you can't organize others to clean. Because literally, you have, say there's a person doesn't know how to clean. They have servants in their house still will be dirty. Because they don't know what cleanliness is. So, alright. The original question was on training for girls, what things to train in.
Yeah, no, I figured, because I came in when you were starting.
Okay. Does that work?
Yeah.
Okay. Something else? Looks like it's going to be a slow...
Q&A.
Yes. Yes.
Regarding the boys who are staying in Gurukul, if there is a certain age when you actually can say which varna the boys, you know.
Which varna they belong.
Yeah.
Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out is when you're training, and Prabhupada also mentions it, that you deal with them as what is manifesting at that point. So how they respond, how they learn best, that's how you teach them. Because it means you're dealing but the actual point is what they do with it after they finish their education. So then what they do with that's how you can tell the varna. But what you're dealing with is that the living entities in the material world, so the predominance is ignorance. So without training, then ignorance will be the main thing. So the varnas are governed by the modes. So then if you have someone who's in ignorance, they will act in the capacity of a Shudra. But by doing devotional service, functioning in the Gurukul, getting training, they start to get purified. Now if that's their nature, is that of a Shudra, then they'll come to a nice standard of good, cultured, and Krishna-conscious Shudra. But if we find that it's just covering, then more of passion will start coming up. Then you'll see they'll start to act like a Vaishya. So it may end there, or it may keep going till Kshatriya, may keep going till they're Brahman. Whichever point it stops at, then whichever point they're at, that's how you train them. And then when it comes to the point it becomes stable and they go out, they do things, then that's what you see they are. Because many times you have kids, they love music. But once they graduate, then they're not musicians. They do something else. Or sometimes the kids that are just... I've seen a few kids that they just kind of go along. They just do what they're supposed to do. When they were young, they were generally really crazy. and that, and then when they grow up, then you're not sure what they're going to do. Then they leave the school, and they go out, and they become pujaris. And 20, 30 years later, they're still pujaris. Right? I'm not sure where we were going with
this. Yeah, I wasn't quite sure where you were going. We could have gone a few different ways.
Yeah. I was thinking about those Nepali boys.
Yeah.
So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it's what they're doing in the Gurukul that doesn't define what they'll be. That's where you'll train them. But what they do with it, that's then how you define. That's why the better the training, the more they have a service attitude, the more they have sense of duty, those six things that a brahmachari should develop, respect of authority, study, then a service attitude, ability to do work, controlled senses, and understanding what is appropriate for them according to their age and position and environment. If they can understand those six, they can function anywhere. So they can remain a brahmachari, they can be a grihastha, they can do anything they want. Because if you don't have those six, you actually can't function in the world. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because that's the whole point. Many thought, well, what are they doing for the world? Varnashram is how you maintain yourself in the world. Right? Does that make sense? So if it's based just on a piece of paper, who needs a piece of paper? Does a businessman need a piece of paper? No. Does a politician or administrator need a piece of paper? No. You understand? Brahmins, if they want them in a certain thing, yes, then they nowadays expect a piece of paper. But let's say to be a priest or these kind of things, you need no pieces of paper. So technically, who needs a piece of paper? It's got to have a piece of paper if they want to do that kind of work. It's shudras. So this concern that you have to have a piece of paper is a shudra concern. It's not a Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya concern. Does that make sense? You know, this is very specific. They want to be a neural brain surgeon. Okay, then you worry about the piece of paper. But does that make sense? So Varnashram prepares them for the world. Because if you have a service attitude and can work, know how to behave, know how to respect authority, have knowledge, have controlled senses, you will make it in the you will make it in whatever, wherever you go. Because that's what people who are successful are looking for. They're looking for those, but just like we said, how many people can actually clean? In the same way, people who actually run the day-to-day things of how the world works, they're looking for these people. Because they know actually the amount of knowledge you need to do the job that they have for you, basically in 3 weeks on-the-job training you can do. The going to school and getting a paper simply shows them you have enough focus and determination that you can stick at something. That's what it means for them. It's not that because you learn computers, therefore you're a computer man. Because after 6 months, whatever you know, it's gone. You know what I'm saying? And they know that what they teach you in the business school or these or that's not business. Otherwise, all those people would be businessmen. They're not. Does that make sense? So if someone's smart, someone can do, someone's leader, people will take them. Is that okay? Something else? Yes.
Three kinds of father is mentioned. What is it?
Three kinds of father. I mean, like father, grandfather, great-grandfather. Well, you have the three aspects of the biological father, the one who protects you, the one who feeds you. So these three are there. So the persons who do that, they have that relationship of father. It means the general tendency is to go by the biological. But if the biological doesn't take care of you, then they're the father, but not really the father. The person who, so Nanda Baba is Krishna's father, according to Shastra, because he protects him, he feeds him. Right? And so at that stage, then only Vasudeva is biological, but he's not doing the other two. Then when he moves to Dwarka, then he takes care and sees he gets educated and everything like that. Then he just takes care of those things. So that's, I'm not sure, is that the three, sir, is that the three you were meaning? Yes, because otherwise, many times it's thought, okay, besides that you have the father, you have, you know, any of the senior members of the family, uncles, grand, you know, fathers like this. Then you have teachers, you have the king, the Brahmin, like this. They'll all be different varieties, but it's the same flavor. So they're either training you, taking care of you, protecting you, feeding you, like that. Biological, that's kind of limited to one. But, you know. That makes sense. So, in other words, it comes up because there's sometimes the concept that the Gurukul teacher is just, they're there as a facility for the parents so that they get a bit of a break and some time on Facebook. Rather than the relationship with the teacher is as solid as it is with the parents.
Consistently.
Yes.
Also related to the Varnashram thing.
Yes, please.
There's three aspects which probably are touched on sometimes but not really thought about in terms of relationship with raising a kid, child. And that's the teachers, the parents, and the community. So oftentimes, you know, there's a lack of understanding about how, what role each of those groups play and when. For example, you know, Mara's giving the example of, you know, the teachers, the facilitators, for the parents' enjoyment, basically, means they get their free time on a grosser platform. They, someone to raise and look after their kids, and then they'll reap the result of that later on. You know, so various things like that. So when each sector, when each person, you know, in the community, and the community includes the teachers and includes the parents, understand their roles and how, you know, the saying, and I'm sure you've heard it, this last 3 or 4 days, it takes a village to raise a child. If not, you know, we just said it then. But it's not that everyone's equal. It's not that everyone does the same thing. It's not that the energy is the same. And unfortunately, in the modern times, equality has a lot of meaning because we don't really understand what equality means. Everyone wants to push themselves on the platform. Just an example of that just now, the chief minister is coming. So the non-devotees, they understand where they're supposed to be. You stay here and that's your spot. The devotees, because they're devotees and they're ISKCON devotees, then they, no, I'm a devotee. They want to go in the temple, they want to go in the, you know, the sterile security areas. So people don't really care to understand what their roles are. They're not satisfied with that. And so when you're not satisfied with your role either, you'll never be satisfied in your varna or ashram for that matter. You know, being satisfied in an ashram is pretty rare these days, I would say. Also, what to speak of varna, where, you know, like cleaning is a second or third class. So you're happy. Everyone would love to be classified as a Brahmin. Yeah, Brahmin. Kshatriya is also good. But Vaishya and Shudra?
Unless you got a lot of money.
Even then, the guys who have a lot of money, they don't care.
Oh, okay.
And there's a few. Okay, there's not many of those in ISKCON either.
Yeah.
And the ones that have the money, they don't care what they are. They're just happy because their money's their thing. They understand that. So this value of identity and understanding of identity, proper identity, comes when you have a proper Gurukul system set up. But unless you have the community who understand the same thing, and parents who understand the same thing, you get a lot of khichdi, mishmash. And hopefully in 50 years or 100 years, as, you know, the Gurukul system becomes more well established, more well accepted, then you'll start seeing where the community understand their role, parents understand their role, teachers understand their role, and then you'll have a very healthy dynamic. But it starts, you know, with kids. Hopefully, you know, they'll maintain it. But when many times we've seen also kids leave and graduate the school, they're vibrating at a certain level because of association. When they come out of that association, then it becomes up to the parents and the community to give them that support and association. But unfortunately, they don't get that. So then they have to find their own level. Water finds its own level, we all know. So kids, we all find our own level in the environment that we're in. So for children, it's exactly the same. And then for young adults, it's exactly the same as well. So just, yeah, about the mixed community to support them. Mm.
Yes.
Can you maybe a little bit more elaborate on the role of the parents in regard to the school or regard to the community?
The traditional role of a parent is like this, and parents don't like to hear it, but it's like this. It boils down to this. You have a child through Garbhodan Samskar. You do the samskaras. Then at some point, depending on your varna, on the family varna usually, because the child's varna is yet to manifest, you drop your kid off at 5, 8, or 12
is the latest.
Up to 12 with the teacher, and then you pick them up when they graduated. Why is that? And then, okay, the counter to that many times is, well, look, you're a devotee, you're a teacher, but you're a devotee. We're also devotees, so like, what? Why are you discriminating like that? The point is that when you're dealing in the realm of attachment, everything is flavored with that. So the parent's primary responsibility in our society today, you could say, is to try to give the child to the teacher and not let their own attachments be mirrored onto the child and onto the situation the child's in. If we can manage our attachments, because we all have them. I have a 4-year-old. Mara is granddad, dad here. But if we can manage our attachments so they don't mirror onto the child's experience in the Gurukul with the teacher, then we're doing our job. And how do we understand if we're mirroring our attachment or not? Is by careful introspection and analysis, by surrender, by detachment, by practicing detachment. That's, I would say, the primary role. And another simple analogy is like this. The mother, the father, and the teacher are the authority for the child's life. Now, different phases of that life, different phases, a different, emphasis on authority. So before the child comes to the Gurukul, the parents are the primary authority. When the child's in the Gurukul, the teacher is the primary authority. And so the parents have to do whatever is needed to support that and give that idea to the child. And then when the child graduates, then again the parents, if you follow a little more traditional culture, the parents become, again, the primary authority. But you see, boys come and they speak to the teacher, ask questions, they have some difficulty, but the parents become the main the main authority again. Or in the world that we live in, which is a little less traditional, they become their own authority as adults, so to speak. And then the parents, they may have if they come from a little more traditional background, then the parents would be more involved in that. But that's, without a lot of extra fluff on it, what it boils down to, not letting our attachments, mirror onto the child.
Yes.
Meaning that the parents are living, wanting to live vicariously through the child.
Not just vicariously, Anuji. We are so unaware of our own minds. 99% of the time. Sometimes devotees, being more introspective, will scratch a few levels, but there are so many levels to that. I'll give you an example. And I'm sure parents, those of you who are parents, have experienced this yourself. You see a child developing. And if you're a little conscious, you see them picking up physical habits of the parents. If you're a little more subtle, you see them pick up vocabulary and language of the parents. And if you're a little more subtle, you'll see that they're picking up what you're thinking. How you think is that they're picking that up. And why is that? Because it's by association. And so an example that we see often in the school is that even though the parents may be very, very supportive of what's going on, but they may have some misunderstanding or they heard something, they're unhappy about something, which is normal and natural. But because they're not dealing with that in the proper way, that energy that's vibrating between the mother and the father, the kid starts picking it up. So there's levels to that. It's not just that. Also, that's more on a little more on the grosser platform, that living vicariously through the offspring, but it goes deeper levels.
Yeah, you want to make sure is that the things that you didn't do in your life that you're not trying to get it for your kids. Like I've seen some, they didn't get a modern Karmi education. And the parents are situated quite nicely, but they always were thinking that if we had had more modern education, we'd be situated better. And so then they expect that their child would get these kind of education, so that therefore they will actually make it in the world how the parent would have liked to have made it, but they didn't. So, yeah, these things one has to be very, very careful that they're...
But that attachment's okay.
Yeah. Means that you're attached to them, that's not the problem.
She said you're attached to them going to the Gurukul.
Oh, yeah. No, that's okay. as long as they are able to function in that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, because the Gurukul is the Vedic system of education. It's the recommended, what Krishna went to. So that's there. The difficulty is that it takes it out of the traditional laws of how it should function. And so then the whole educational system is speculative. That's the difficulty. So then what happens is instead of impressing upon the children the traditional standards, how to judge things, we impress upon the children the standards by which we function, which may not be according to Scripture. Does that make sense? One of the most, I find most interesting, you know, coming from the Anglo-Saxon triumvirate, you know, of America, England, and Australia, you know, right? I mean, they do control everything, right? You know? Well,
they think they do.
Okay, yeah, but that's good enough. So then, in learning language, it's been going on for so long. I mean, you know, you're talking about like 100 or 200 years. Speculation on how to learn English. Basically, it comes down to, is it the phonetic or is it the linguistic? And the two schools don't really get along. Right? You know, it's like, you know, how you say string theory and particle theory and quantum, right? So, but the interesting thing is that people who are learning to read in English with the same spellings, the same everything, for hundreds and hundreds of years, and everybody could learn very easily by a set system that was there. But then, as we got into the Age of Enlightenment, when it wasn't about authority, and it wasn't about the connection with God and natural laws. It was about, no, we can establish what's going on. Then it was decided that this method of learning, it's insulting to the children. Because they just would learn the different syllables and the different things like that. So they just go through and, you know, oh, no, fo, no, like this. And they say, oh, that's insulting, you know, they could be doing so much more. And so then that system was dropped. And since that time, those learning English, instead of it being, you know, weeks or, you know, a few months to learn to read, it's 2 years. That's if they're smart. And they keep going on speculating because they think, oh, this is good. That's not good for the kid. Like I just said, the latest thing I heard is that it's bad to have best friends in school. Because then you are being exclusive, you know, you're in your own group, it's not inclusive of everyone, nice to everybody. Wouldn't it be nice if we were nice to everybody? And so now the schools are enforcing that you can't have, I mean, this is in England and America. You know, in America.
It hasn't quite gone to England yet.
Oh, I thought it was, okay. So it's just America, so they have that, you know, like that. Or I remember in school going through, the teachers I learned the most from were the wood shop teacher and the metal shop teacher. Because they're practical, they just do stuff. I just heard that now one of the latest things is they're not offering these courses because it's dangerous to the children. They might hit their hand with a hammer or drop a hammer on their foot. So therefore it's too dangerous. They're removing it from the curriculum. So that's the whole point is that this aspect of speculation, if we apply that, it's gonna not work out good. So unless the Vedic standard is there and we judge according to that, then it's all right. So therefore, wanting to send your kids to the school or trying to the Gurukul or trying to follow the Vedic standards of culture and behavior, and that you're enforcing, then that's correct. You can't worry that, well, what if later they blame us? Because you're already giving them the best. If they want to take second best, that's their choice. But it's being made out as if Gurukul and modern education are on equal footing. In fact, modern's probably a little better. It's just because we're devotees. We've taken this kind of second grade thing. You know, but actually we'd rather take the, you know, the real, you know. Does that make sense? So if we have to be careful that those things don't go on to the children.
What most devotees would like is what they call the best of both worlds. And Mara said a funny, nice joke about the best of both worlds. Says, everyone understand what I mean by best of both worlds, right? You have a Gurukul, but just make sure they're academics and they have the certificate or whatever. So the best of both worlds means what's good in this material world and what's bad in the spiritual world. There's no, what best of both worlds? We don't want to be in this world. That's why we're devoting.
Yeah. And there's nothing bad in the spiritual world. So,
what's the problem?
Yeah. We had that once. A request had come up that we run the ashram.
Yeah.
For the Smiths. But then the problem is the kids would have their classes, they would have their homework, they would have, and if you do the modern education, once you do that for 6 hours, your brain's fried, you need at least 2 or 3 hours, they're running around like a madman to even just unwind, right? And so then the problem comes is there is no time for ashram. So it never could be done, because we show it, is that, you know, half the time has to go into the ashram. And so since they're giving 6 hours, that means they'd have to give 3. They're not going to give 3. And they're not going to increase their school to 12 hours. So it actually can't be done. Because even if you say, okay, no, you can do it 12 hours, as we said, the system, it requires homework, which we don't need. And it requires unwinding, which we don't need. So right there, that's 5 hours. So that means, like say, okay, that's 12 and 5 is 17 hours. So if you have 17 hours for school, then we could do that. And that leaves 1 hour, you know, for going home with the parents. Half an hour morning and evening, I guess, and 6 hours sleeping. So. No? No. If the family
has a desire to send their child to school, so the father is not able because of work, is it recommended that mother's stay, let's say in Mayapur, or is it actually required for parents to stay in the vicinity when the child is in Gurukul? And if the mother stays in Gurukul, does it create an imbalance if the father is not there?
Right. The basic thing is that we require, at least when they're young, anyone, that for 6 months, then they're living with the family. And if they're younger, it's going to be longer until they can adjust and function within the system and comfortably. Because you have both the child being used to being at the school and being comfortable there in that environment, and that it's complete enough for them, and also the parent, that they're adjusting and are comfortable that the child's not at home but is at the school. So you have to have some time like that. Does that make sense? So for that, then more detail.
I would say that if the mother and father have a very dynamic family environment and they actually put time into their children, then it's unhealthy to break up that dynamic. And we see cases of that in Mayapur. If the family dynamic is not so dynamic, not healthy, mother and father are not interested in each other, you know, it's convenient. Married, kids come, okay, he works, she's at home, or she works, she's at home, or they both work, the kids at school, then it's always better for the kids' sake, not for the marriage, that the kid just gets in Gurukul. But if it's a healthy father, healthy mother, there's a nice healthy dynamic, it's always better they stay there. And when the situation is right, the kid, instead of coming at 5, may come at 8. That will be a much healthier, well-balanced child that the teacher has something to work with. Otherwise, sometimes it takes years, and I mean that literally, to decompress a child from their experience with their own family, which is very unfortunate. But when you have a healthy dynamic, when the child has received 5 years of attention and love and care from the mother, from the father, the parents have a healthy relationship, then the kid's ready by 5. Otherwise, sometimes 8, 9, 10, then they might be ready. So it would very much depend on individual circumstances. And I would never recommend as an authority in the school that unless the parents have a very healthy dynamic that you split like that, because it's a recipe for a broken marriage.
What about after the kid's in the school? If he's ashram?
Yeah, if it's a short time, but then like that's why I said 5 and 8, because okay. Generally what we're seeing is that boys at 5 are not ready to be in the ashram. They're comfortable in the day school environment. They come for, you know, early and leave late, but they go home every day. So, you know, that's what, if there's a healthy dynamic, then both parents are here, or they can go for a little while with that separation. But, you know, and then by the time they get to 8, then you see that usually within a year, if the environment is healthy and the parents are supported, then they could adjust and then come in the ashram, and then the family can, you know, the mother and father can reunite. Because once they're in the ashram, technically there's no reason that they have to be in Mayapur. And we have a few, not many, but we have a few boys like that. But until they're in the ashram, it's definitely recommended. Did that make sense?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, was it?
One of the senior educators in Islam in the interview said that, you know, girls' gurukul is more important than a boys' gurukul. For the simple reason that the boys are well-trained, but in the absence of well-trained girls, when they decide to become girls, then what happens? So do you foresee a challenge in our society today? Like, we have a very good ashram for the boys, but when they graduate and they want to become girls, what happens in that situation? Will they be able to manage or still go?
There's many elements that you're dealing with, because as we mentioned before, is that the training of boys so they turn from boys into men, that can only be done by men. It has to have the support of the women, but it can't be done by the women, because it's a different nature. They can expect, but they can't make it happen. Men can make it happen. At the same time, is for girls to be able to be completely girls, it also requires men. Because if the men don't behave as men, girls can't behave as girls. So it's being said it's the girls that need the training, and which is true. It'll just make life easier. But it's actually, unless you have boys properly trained so they can act as men, even you have the girls trained, who are they going to marry? Because they can't convert that if he's not a man, the girl can't convert him into one. So that's why in the Vedic system, then the gurukul is there. The boys have to go to gurukul. If you're from a cultured background, you have to go there. And the girls will be trained at home where there's a proper environment. Right? Because you have families, you have men who are trained, so then it can work. So that's the aspect is there, because if we're saying it's the girls that are going to make it happen, that means then they're the ones organizing, running it, when technically that's not actually how it's, because the man has to create that environment. Then within that, they'll control that and bring that to a very nice level. Right? Does that make sense? That you give something, with that you can do something nice. You know what I'm saying? The guy brings home potatoes, she makes something nice out of it. But you don't bring home potatoes, how is she going to make something nice? Does that make sense? So, the training of girls is extremely important, but then the difficulty comes down is that those who could train the girls don't need a girl's gurukul to do it. those who need the girls' gurukul to train for training the girls, they themselves won't allow that to function because they're not trained enough. So it's a very difficult thing. It's a catch 22. Does that make sense? So the ones that could train themselves by having the school, it just expands it and creates a community environment that you may not have unless you have one of those, you know, 50-person joint families. Then you get a similar kind of thing. So by having a girls' school for those who do have the training, then it just creates a small community in which they can all function in that way. But technically, it's not so necessary. It just gives more experience, broadens it, you know, gives more eclectic, brings in more people, creates more relationships. But only those people can take part. Does that make sense? So when it's there, the idea many want, but as Prabhu mentioned before, is that the teacher is on the same level as the parent when it comes to as authority in their time and for the lifetime. So that works all right if it's the man, it's the son, women can handle that. But when it's the daughter, they're the authority and they cannot tolerate that another woman is an authority over their daughter. It's just not possible. So only if someone's very nicely trained in the tradition, then they're comfortable with that because they act as mother and everybody else does. Then you can do. So mothers can get together. But if the mood is not of mother, they can't deal with each other. So that's the difficulty. So unless one can set up a girls' educational institution that takes out that the person who is controlling the girl, then the parents can be involved, the mother is okay. But then if you do that, you're not actually benefiting the girl. So it's a problem. But the point is if that was the most important, then that would be what the Vedas would emphasize. So they emphasize the gurukul for the boys. Because if boys are there, they'll create the environment. Now they have to have the support of the women. Right? If women aren't into varnashram, it's not going to happen. If they're into it, it happens. But the point is the men have to be already arranging it, know what it is, know what to do, and can show what it can do. Then when the women accept it, then it works. So even without it, you can, over the generations, it'll happen. Because the point is if a certain behavior is there and that's appreciated, then girls will adjust to it. Boys, without training, they're not going to get there. Because they're not even going to work out that it exists. Girls are observant enough, they can figure out what works. Right? But the Vedic means more work. And so the modern means less work or no work. It's just supposed to happen because you have rights. You ever heard of the modern liberals talking about their own obligations? No, authority has obligation, and the person who's demanding rights has zero obligation.
Authority and everyone else.
Yeah. And they can control everybody else, tell everybody else what to do, even though they can't do any of that. So in that environment, then you can't have a family, you can't have a community, you can't have administration, you can't have anything that's organized. Like that. We may get by a bit because factually the Lord's organizing things. You know, so things run because Krishna organizes it. But if we weren't functioning within that, we'd be in debt. You know, having nothing would be good. We have less than nothing. Does that make sense? So in other words, it's a very nice thing. So therefore, then you can have parents who are interested, they're training, like-minded parents can get together and do things. Individuals who has that ability amongst those who appreciate it, they can do. But to make a institutional element, then it runs into a lot of problems because of the, how you say, 100 mustaches, 4 breasts, theorem. Does that make sense? We all know that theorem? No? Chanakya Pandit says, you can have 100 mustaches peacefully reside in one room together, but not four breasts. You understand? Because a man will be there, his ego will take up his space. Right? But the woman, whatever space is there, her ego will take up the whole thing. So you can't have two women. Because they take up all the space.
The only way is if they all accept one.
Yeah, if they all accept one authority, then that works. But then that's the problem. And the modern thing is each girl is trying to be the, you know, alpha girl. So they can't accept that. If they do accept authority and accept that there are, so then whoever it is, like in traditional families, the grandmother's in that position. She controls everything. Right? And so then she knows everything, even the others don't know. Like one devotee was telling me from one of these, you know, big South Indian families, says the grandmother, means all the money that all the men would make would all go to the grandmother because she would manage the house. You know, things outside the house the men took care of, but the house money, that was just given to her. And because everyone had come to her individually, no one knew how much anybody was bringing. So if one of the brothers lost their job, no one else knew about it. Because she would just make it run, move the money around and that, and while he got a job. So she was the only one in the family that knew that he didn't have a job. And then, you know, so many weeks or months, then he's got a job, then it goes back to normal. So if you have that kind of system, that's okay. But the modern system, why we're demanding the position of women, doesn't allow that. Only the Vedic system then allow that you have a hierarchy of women. Because there is a pecking order. You know, it's just like you have a coop full of chickens. There is a pecking order. There is a head chicken. And then it goes down from there. That's why they call it pecking order. Because if you're out of line, you get pecked. So what's the order of where you fit into the pecking system? Who do you peck and who do you get pecked by? So if that's there, then that works. It works very nicely. And if it's not there, you can't do anything. But the point is the solution is you train the boys with generations, then this facility, whether they're being trained at the home, at a school, or a combination, you can work it out. But until you create the environment, then you can't do it. Does that make sense? It's as far as the culture goes, it's a great idea. But how to do it, then the difficulty comes is that, you know, this aspect of that jealousy. Does that make sense? You know, you have it to a lesser degree with the boys because why it won't affect the boys? Because the boys, it's a men's environment. It's just obvious. So the ladies don't feel they have any control there. And as long as it's going on, the kid's happy, it's all right. Right? But in the women's school, it's a women's environment. So all women think they have a right to come in and control that environment. So they don't accept that the teacher is the main woman there. They feel they can come in at any time, and they should be able to control her and all the kids. So if it's going great at the school, they want to be able to come and take part in that greatness. And then when it doesn't work, then they get very annoyed. Like I know one lady, she just one day unannounced showed up at the school. Just she had heard about it, was interested. She showed up at the school. She showed up on a off day when they were just doing maha cleaning. All the girls are running around cleaning and all this and that. And one girl talked to her and this and that, but that was it. She sat there a while, watched, and she left. Later I heard her complain to me that I went to the school, these girls aren't trained, they don't take care. A guest came and they didn't stop everything to take care of her and do what, interact with her how she wanted. To this day, this was maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, she still hates the school and anybody who was involved with it. It's just, that, you know, Who asked? Who said like that? Who that means? And the point is they're there to get trained, so they don't know those things. You could say, "As I came, this happened," you know. But the point is you know, it wasn't I came to see and this and that. It was Vinny Vidi Vici. That was their reason for coming. You understand? Others, you say, my daughter would like to know something about the school she's interested. Parent is not interested at all. So you say, yeah, you can send her on these days when they're, you know, where classes are running. But on these days, we're doing cleaning and other things like that. You know, it's a different kind of style of day. Or you put it into cooking a big feast for, you know, together or doing things like that. But class days. The parent would not send them on a class day. She specifically sent them on an off day. And so then what happened? They're just cooking, cleaning, doing things like that. They come home, well, what did you do? That's it. From that day, which was maybe 15 years ago, till today, all they do in the Gurukul is cook and clean. They don't train them in anything. They have no classes. We specifically told them when all these things are. You understand? So this is the difficulty you're dealing with. It's a reality. So that's the whole point. Until you have the men trained, that they can create that environment in which the women are very comfortable, then they can start to look at these different things. You can expand it. But until that happens, it'll be very, very difficult. So individuals can do something, but you can't do anything on a big scale. So you have to train the boys first. Once that's done, you have the environment. Then within that, then the women can create, you know, all these nice little things. Because the point is the institutional doesn't have as much of the personal element. Well, the more it's personal, it's like the home, then that works for the girls. Does that make sense? Yes.
What's the importance of martial arts?
What's the importance of martial arts?
In the Vedic education.
In the Vedic education.
Yeah. And if all the boys practicing here.
If they practice, do they all practice?
Do they all practice? Yeah. I mean, the general position, I mean, there'll be so many details, is that you have your different experiences. So you're learning how to do service, menial service, how to perform activities like this that are beyond your normal capacity of just sitting at home, running around, yelling and screaming and eating. Right? So you're trying to expand that. Then you have the knowledge that's being given and you're being pushed in the academic area. But then in the martial arts, then it's also, there's a push in just that physically applying yourself, the concentration required, the commitment required, the time required. And by that, then they learn more discipline, more respect and all that. So it becomes a very natural part of the school, especially in a contemporary environment. And so then those boys that are good at, do well in there, you generally see it also helps a lot in their application in leadership. Because they have discipline, they can follow authority, therefore they can lead. So it's not a matter of that, you know, if you don't follow them, they'll punch your lights out or something like that. It's your character creates the ability to lead. So then that's a natural thing. And so that's then why we had it.
It's kind of support for all.
It's support. Each thing supports the other. Some kids, then they aren't interested, and so they'll focus in other areas and they'll do fine. Like that. But for those who have that kind of ability, they have that more, they can physically engage themselves, they can apply themselves there, then by having it, it's very good for them. Like that. We've seen very, very good results like that. We've never seen any negative results from the system. And it's open that anybody can be involved. That's also important. Because even you have a child who doesn't have the ability to be involved, unless they try it, they won't know. Like I remember when we first started the martial arts, I think it was maybe what, 86 or...
86 or
70. Yeah, 86 or like that. We had one person who was a martial artist, and then they opened classes. So we had, I think, 120 kids, and except for the ones that were, you know, about this tall, then everybody wanted to do it. So the first day of class, there was like 100 kids in the class. So they all come in and think, okay, this is going to be it. You know, we're going to start this and that. So the first thing they did, once they did the invocation, is, okay, you know, 25 push-ups. Like that. The next day, there are quite a few less kids. You know, and within 3 weeks, then the ones that were serious about it, they were there, and they were there for the next so many years. But if you say, no, you can't do it because we know you can't, then no, they'll always want, and then they'll have this thing, and then when they're out of school, they'll go to a martial arts school, and they won't figure it out in a few days or weeks. It'll take them years to figure out. So it's something that it's open. They can go, but you have to do what's there. But the main thing about it, because when you're dealing, is discipline. Because the whole point of the martial arts is that you're learning the subtler aspects of how things work. So it's about control of the mind. That's what makes it. So the mind moves, then the body moves. So it's about that. If it's just about, you know, fighting and all that, that's why we're not teaching like boxing or something, because then you may not catch that. But you teach the Oriental. Then that's a very essential point of the...
You teach boxing.
Yeah, I mean, but it's part of...
With the Oriental kind of mindset.
Yeah, with the Oriental mindset. You have to get that together. Does that make sense? So we'll use from whatever works. Like that. We have a core system, and then we add to it what we feel is going to enhance it, make it better. Is that okay? Yeah. And that also, boys, girls, or the girls were there, they were also learning. Yeah, for those who are interested.
That was my question. The girls are also...
Yes. It means it's there. It means in the I can't say about other arts, but like in Kerala, the Kalardi Payat, that's taught to everybody. But they have different levels. So the first level, which is all the technique and that everybody learns. Because then you can protect yourself, protect the village, because the idea is you don't have anybody out there, so if the village is attacked by anybody, then everybody in the village can defend the village. So men and women, according to their interest and ability. There's no force, but if they're interested, why not? Does that make sense? But whether they want to take it farther than just basic self-defense or that's then going to be...
And that's the same with the boys.
Yeah, same with the boys.
You take it to whatever level you want to take it to. For most of the boys, they learn while they're here, and then they leave, and they may not practice, they may not. Some boys will take it seriously physically. They may practice more, get into other martial arts. A few boys will actually make it a lifestyle, which is a lifestyle of discipline and respect and understanding the way energy moves in the martial capacity.
To what extent is humility versus defense, that how strong
can
you use this martial art
to
kind of impose what they want to
like
instead of defense versus...
Yeah, that's part of the training. That's part of the mindset. It's like anything, any skill, we can think we're the top dog. And the beauty about martial arts, Morris said, there's not a threat, definitely, but when you come and train with people whose skill far exceeds yours, you get a certain understanding. And, you know, you get to the top of the pile, and then you realize that there's another pile. A story my martial arts teacher told me once, he said that you've been working for the last 14 years to reach your master level. And so it looks like a great mountain. And you climb, you climb, climb, you get to the top, and you look down one way, and you say, oh, I've made it. I'm up the top. And it's true in many ways. He said, but then you turn around and you see another one. So that's why Mara's emphasized on the Oriental mindset, where it's more about the development of the self and the ability to cultivate respect, to give and receive respect, than it is about necessarily any, although of course it is a martial art, the physical ability certainly is goes along with that. There's a story a yoga teacher and a martial artist were having a discussion. And they, you know, a long discussion. At the end of it, they were both, you know, very happy. Said, yeah, we're both doing the same thing. And the martial artist, he said, yeah, but there's only one difference. And the yoga teacher said, oh, what? He says, if someone comes and pushes me off my meditation mat, I can do something about it. So, I mean, you know, it's fine. And the yoga, you know, you can't Garuda on someone to, you know, to submission. So it's the same thing, it's just a different journey. And for the boys, it does emphasize, it's made a tremendous difference. Martial arts wasn't a part of the school's syllabus for, what, a good 2 decades?
Yeah.
At least 15 years until about 10 years ago. And in that 10 years, it's made a tremendous difference on the physical health of the boys, on their mental health, on their ability to channel and manage their emotions, input and output. So it's made a big difference. We train different. The main emphasis is Chinese Kung Fu, Southern Praying Mantis, but we also do others. We train grappling, wrestling.
It also pushes the limits physically, because a lot of the difficulty people have in it is austerity. You know, to just be able to be austere, to just sit down and do things that are good for your sadhana, but may not be, you'd rather be sleeping than chanting your japa, or you're a little hungry and you can't get distracted. But if you can handle the physical focus that's there within the martial arts, then all these other things actually aren't very difficult. So at least on that side, it makes it very good. And we see is that, you know, traditionally the administrators, they all learned martial arts. And then from that, you know, the Vaishyas, the Brahmins, they may or may not to some degree. But it wasn't an uncommon thing. So like in the local area here, all the Goshas, they all know stick fighting and other stuff like that. It's just one of the things they do, because if you're out with a bunch of cows, you know, and something comes along that shouldn't be there, you can put up a big bit of a fight. So it's just part of just protecting what you have. Does that make sense? And if Brahmins got into it, then they were very good. Drona, Kripa, and, you know, Parasuram, like this. But otherwise, then they depend upon the Lord. But the, how do you say it? Yeah. Does that make sense?
When it comes to philosophy, the kids are learning things like logic. How do they learn to apply this?
How do they learn to apply the logic?
Yeah, and the philosophy, do they engage in debates, things like this?
I mean, okay, well, could you all hear? He's okay. So, the debate isn't actually the main thrust of philosophy. The main thrust of philosophy is to be able to apply it into your life and govern your life by it. See, because logic, in the Vedic sense, it includes tarka, or argument, you know, or rhetoric. But it's the actual purpose of logic is siddhanta. That's what Krishna says in the Gita. Of all the 16 angas or parts of logic, siddhanta is him. So whatever, if you go through the process and come to siddhanta, conclusion, then it's, the whole thing becomes Krishna. But if you don't, then it's just argument. So it's not that the argumentation is the actual main point. It's the ability to see this aspect of philosophy in your life and apply it. And we always have so many elements or occasions to be able to apply that in our life. Because material world isn't easy, so that generally what's the we can take shelter of philosophy for that, because materially there isn't really any solution unless you want to increase your rage and anger and you're the victim and all that, then you can kind of make yourself feel a little good, but it doesn't give you any peace. So then it won't be good for self-realization. So being able to apply the philosophy, that's the main thrust. That's what we're trying to do. Right? So the core is that we're trying to make devotees. And so therefore all the philosophy, all the ashram training, all the things are to be seen in context of how the Srimad Bhagavatam shows is connected to Krishna. Right? Because the central book is Bhagavatam. Everything else has to have that connection. Right? And so, therefore, then the technical point of that aspect, then it's for use. Because for us, we're trying to, the school is designed in curriculum to generate Shrikarya Brahmins. Right? You know, no. Shrikarya means they're Brahmins who they have the ability to organize. So you have three levels of them. The first level is that they are secretary to the Acharya. You know, like Swarup Damodar Goswami or like that. He was organizing the whole thing. Does that make sense? The second level would be like Pujari, Sankirtan leader, and this kind of thing. The third would be, then they would be, you know, minister to the government, prime minister, ministers like this. So they know how to use it. It's just a matter of what is necessary and what's their ability.
An emphasis.
Yes, an emphasis. Right? Because you may be doing what, just like Chanakya Pandit. Why did he get involved in the government? So in other words, he took up the position of that third level. His whole purpose was so the kingdom would be peaceful so he could run his Gurukul. That was the actual reason. He's running his Gurukul. The government's not good. It's overrun by all kinds of, you know, thieves, this, that, coming through. He got into government just to make a new king that knew how to run the government so that he could go back and run his school. Right? That's why once the king is there and everything, you don't really hear much about Chanakya. You hear about him up to that point. It took him 8 years, but he did it. Right? So that's Shrikarya. They're teachers, they're preachers, they're leaders, but they can also organize. Now, in that, we can say, oh, but that's very specific. What about everybody else? Now, Shrikarya, they're Brahmins, so that is all the Brahminical stuff they know. So anybody who has a Brahminical nature can learn from the school. Then, because you have the administrative element, anybody who's an administrator can learn. Right? And if you say Vaishyas, then the important thing to learn for a Vaishya in the Gurukul is the control of the senses, the focus, the character, and all those things. And so because of the ashram training, you know, to get properly for training Brahmins and Kshatriyas, that must be there, so they get full benefit. And because it's all about being devotional, then therefore if someone has a Shudra nature, then it's about seeing whatever they're doing in connection to Krishna. So by that one emphasis, all the others are trained. So therefore, what leads the school, what runs the school, they're all Shrikarya Brahmins. And so therefore then, and you see, they're turning out, like we had one boy graduated, what, last November, I think? No, before that. Last year.
November last.
Yeah, November last. And then he's the temple president. So they can do all these things. And the funny thing, I was speaking to him the other day, and he was thinking, when they asked him to be president, he thought that's impossible. He couldn't do that. He doesn't have the training. He doesn't this and that and so like that. But they said, no, you try it and this and that. He found out it's so easy because having to manage a bunch of, you know, 10 little kids and get them all to go in the same direction at once takes more effort than being a temple president.
And there's something to add. He's the temple president of a temple where there's a lot of grumpy Prabhupada disciples.
And they want him to be the president.
With a lot of different affiliations.
Yes.
Laughs.
Yes. So does that make sense? Yes. So that's the whole idea, is that you choose what will give the main thing. So it's not that we're training all the four like that. We're training this one. By doing that, you get everything else. Yeah, it trickles down. And so it works. Then our focus is very clear, very exact. It has a particular flavor. So it's Brahminical, but we don't produce scholars. Scholars don't come near our school, literally, because they can't speculate. They want to speculate. That's their taste. Well, here it's no. It has to be practical. You have to be able to apply the philosophy. You have to understand it so you can apply it. They don't like that. They can't sit in the library and study for 10, 12 hours a day. They actually have to go out, wash their clothes, cook lunch, clean and all that. They just don't make it. So we don't produce scholars. We don't produce modern academics like this. The things that we don't, people who just think, business, you know, how you say, management's going to make it, you know, ISKCON work again and all this and that. Those, not like that. Those who understand devotional service in a practical way, apply it in their life, they flourish. Others actually don't. They can't, because the basis is practical Krishna consciousness. So even though we have so much, the technicalness of some of our academic things and other things that we do is so much greater than probably most devotees in ISKCON are even can do, or let alone even be aware of. But because of that simple direct aspect, people don't know it. They just think it's a bunch of nice looking huts and a nice garden, and that's it. But the puja we do, I guarantee you, 99.9% of devotees in the movement can't do it. The yajñas we do, even those who are yajñic brahmins around the world that do all the yajñas and installations, they can't do our yajña. Because it's all Vedic, it's all the tradition, they can't do that. The abhishekas we do, they can't organize them.
There's an important differentiation when Mara said it's all Vedic, but I'm sorry if I use don't mind if I use your example.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's very few people in the movement, probably none that has it, but very few, who can take the essence of something and apply it in a purely Gaudiya way. You have experts in the movement who have studied the Sri system or this system or that system. When you watch them do these, you know, the puja or the yajna, that's what it looks like, except not as good.
Mm.
They can't understand how to bring it in line with the Gaudiya system. But Maharaj, we're very lucky to have his association and input, finds a way that whatever it is can go to the most Sri of Sri Yajnas in, you know, in the most Sri place in South India and bring it back, and it's not weird. becomes a natural part of the system, because the most important aspect to understand is the mood. The ritual is unimportant, actually. The mood is the most important. So, the position of the authority that gives us the right understanding of the mood. Otherwise, how do you apply the detail in time, place, or circumstance? How do you apply it here in Mayapur, or this facility, or in New York, or Australia, or wherever? How do you take a yajna, you know, which is steeped in tradition and rules and regulations, ritualistic aspects, and make it a matter of devotion? So, you know, that's a very unique thing. If you excuse, you'll go first to 6. Or?
Yes, we'll go to 6.
I'll, if I can take your leave, I'll have to go to.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, thank Madhav Garanga for his input. Is there no dignity?
Uh-huh.
Is there no dignity?
Seems to be not.
Speaking of Shah, you want to come in?
I didn't announce when Madam Shah came. As I announced the other day, she is one of the deans of the school. He is actually protecting this whole environment. And we saw all teachers here during the last days. One boy, he came many years ago to Gurukul. He went back to his temple. And he came back and I said, how was that? He said, oh, so many problems. This problem, that problem. My sister is complaining like this, my mother. And he said, but here in Gurukul we don't have problems. Then I was laughing. Because the boy is so protected that he can't notice that the problems are coming. Because Madam Shah is taking all these problems in his head and solving them. That's how the boys feel protected in this environment. That's due to his great efforts for many years. He's also a group leader from Marco, and he's now taking charge for years of this group. He's a very busy person. He came today. We are very happy that he came. So please, let's thank him.
Hello. Madam Shah Ki. Yeah, because a dean, so you have a teacher, they teach a particular subject. And depending upon whether they know ashram training or not, they know how to deal with and train people in devotional service. So for us, even our academic teachers, then they have to know the ashram. So they're ashram teachers who are teaching academics, so they'll work nicely. People who are just academic teachers generally won't flourish because they think it's about the subject rather than about the character. So then they don't take that detail as there. Now amongst those, then those who see to the overall character of the training of the boys and all that, whether it's in class, out of class, and that's the deans. The dean, that's the difference between a dean and a teacher or a dean and an administrator, is that the dean, they see to the personal development of the students. Right? So then Madam Mashai is a dean, Preeti Mashai is a dean for the boys' educational program. Right? So that's why they get into all these things, that's why then they deal with these things outside of the boys' purview, so then the boys don't know about what's going on. You know, that doesn't concern them. They don't understand different politics, this and that may be there. They're just comfortable. You know, it's like parents. If they're doing right in the home, the kid just feels that protected environment. They don't know what's going on. Does that make sense? Yeah. Some other questions? Yes. You mean so? It means someone comes to Gurukul but can't function in the Gurukul. Not suitable for Gurukul at the time. Well, you have the aspects of that. They're not suitable now, but maybe after some time they will be. Because they came, they maybe had one idea, or they didn't understand what it actually meant, how much was required, you know, of their actual development of character and that. So they go home, and then after some time they become confident, and then they come back. That's interesting, white on the ear. Right?
Yeah.
Oh, those are the two new cats. Okay. Okay. So, so that aspect that they can try. So we give three times they can try, and many times, many of the boys in there are able to adjust within those three. They get used to it, and then it functions. If not, then we're developing, working on now. Is he still here? He went. Oh, he's not here. Is that the tutorial system that we have for the school, the way the curriculum is being developed, that can be used at home. So then the idea is to have a homeschooling program for our kids that can't be part of it, or, you know, whatever is the reason, the circumstance behind it, then they could be trained at home. So we're working on that at this point. So it's one of the longer term goals. It's not there as so much now, but in the future it will be.
In the interim period, what do the students do when they are sent back to home? They go to the modern school or they are home school during that interim period?
It depends on the parent and what they want. Some parents, they try the school, it doesn't work, they immediately send them to another school. Other parents, then they're at home, they try to train this and that so that they can get into the school. So we have both. You could say more?
Generally what it is that there is a reason for why the boy didn't make it. And we, together with the parents, cooperate, we tell them what to do, what actually the problem is. And the problem is beyond our capacity, what we can presently do for the boy. So we tell the parents what they should work on. And sometimes it takes a couple of weeks, sometimes it takes a month, or a few months, maybe a year. And important element is actually that when the boy comes, the boy comes the first time, and many times it's because the parents want him to come. The boy may know, may not know, but, and because of this, then when he is in the school, then he is not very serious. And he may not make it. When he leaves the school, then he misses his friends, he misses just the way how education is, he developed some attachment or some liking for it.
Into the school.
For the school. And then when he separated from that, then he developed desire, Mom, I want to go back to the school. When that happens, so then he comes on his own. And because of this, we can do much more for the boy, because now he is here on his own. So that's what we are trying to develop together with the parents during the time when the boys are not in the school.
So the tutorial systems are meant to take care of the child when he's with the parents.
Yeah, that will be, you know, like Maharaj was speaking about it, we are developing. Now, until now, it's basically we tell them, you know, what they should work on, so the homeschooling, and just teach him, you know, something, whatever the language, whatever, you know, just somehow or other maintain his sadhana to the extent so he doesn't come too wild. But, you know, when he comes back to the school, then he progresses much quicker.
Because the problem will be something with ashram. As we mentioned before, is that the ashram's good, academically, they'll do their best. So that's never a problem. No one's not in the school because they don't have any brain. It's that they can't function in the school because they don't have character. So then it's always a matter, like Prabhu pointed out, is there's that, what is that actual problem? That's been discussed with the parents, then they work on it, and then, like that, then the boy is able to function. Does that make sense? Yeah. And then that switch from the parents wanting him in the school, that he wants to be in the school. That's the greatest thing, because then they actually make the endeavor to try to adjust.
So? And many times it is that the boys don't have the good character because they are actually not interested in what's being offered to them. It's like, you know, we do have boys who they could not make it anywhere else. But somehow here, because they just become interested, and because so they become into it, so they start to focus, and then we can do something with them. So it's about just to catch the individual, you know, see what the potential is, and according to that, offer that boy, so then you can actually not take him as far as he can go. And then they can respond. But if you just take them as a, you know, bunch of boys in the classroom and deal with them that way, then, you know, some will be interested, but many won't. It won't work.
So, what can we do, like, before the child joins the school, what kind of things should we do to prepare them for the school?
What things to prepare them for the school?
Yeah, to make sure they have the character.
Character. Basically is that you understand the character is the main point in that, is that then that's what's always explained to the children. You're following what you're explaining to them and encouraging them and showing them how to apply that. So that they have that proper ability to interact with others, they have that kind of service mood, like that, then it's easy enough to function in the school. But if they see it's about this, they're the center of attention, that's all that matters, it's all about them, it's self-centered, they're lazy, then you have a problem. Then that you'd have to adjust either by just time, or they're getting an interest in the school, so they'll make the adjustment or something. But if that's always the mood, then that's generally won't be a problem. Like I remember back in the 80s, the Bengali boys, they could function in the school very easily because they had that service attitude. And so they came from villages, and so they could function, no problem. You know, you have a five-year-old. If you told, let's say, this hut here, 2 5-year-olds could sweep the whole hut nicely, make piles, pick up the piles, throw them away, and put the brooms back. Right? But you bring boys from not from that kind of environment, you could even have 20 of them, and you couldn't get it done. like that.
We had an interview that just last year. One of the parents came with a small boy, 5-year-old boy. And then he was a little tired. So then, all right, just lie down there. It was summer, so put the fan on and just lie down. So he's like peaceful, everything fine. 10 minutes later, then, okay, he was rested. So then he gets up. He folds the blanket, puts the blanket away. He goes, switches off the fan without anybody saying anything. It was just completely natural. Most of the boys, even the big boys, would be, you know, unaware of that. Me folding blanket, I was using it so somebody else should, or when there is service it will come.
Okay, so it's like the Prabhupada's principle, who cooks, someone else washes the dishes. So I slept on the blanket, someone else should fold it up.
So yeah, like you said, the Bengali boys, they have the attitude. So that's what the parents also can train the boys from the very beginning. They can have the attitude, to see and to take care of themselves. And then, they can start from, not from zero, but they can start from, much higher, and then, be ahead.
Yeah, so that point is you have a service attitude, you're aware of these things, then they'll pick it up. If you personally don't like to do anything, then they will pick that up. So that's the point is whatever you would like to see in your child, you should then practice doing that yourself. That's what we were saying, is the Grihastha ashram is an ashram in that you progress spiritually, because then, the parents, then they have to act their best, husband and wife, they have to act at their Krishna conscious best if they want that to progress. As parents, they have to act at their best so the children will, but it has to be, it's not that they're just doing it as a show, it has to be actually what they want. Because everybody lives together, you can figure it out if it's just a show. Does that make sense? So that's the idea. Ayurveda mentions that when a couple wants to have children, they should then discuss amongst themselves what kind of child they want. Right? That doesn't mean blonde hair, blue eyed, that kind of, discussion. where we're talking about, and tall, right? Yeah. Okay. So we're talking about character. What we're looking for in character of the child. Not what they'll look like. The character. And if both parents have the same concept, then there's more chance that the child will have that character. And what is that character they want? That's either it's what they value. So it's what they do, or it's what they value and would like to do. So if you're doing it, you continue that. If it's what you'd like to do, then develop it. And so then you get a consistency.
And involve the child from the beginning.
Involve as they like. Means if they're not, and then you don't. You just, they're there when you do it. Like the mother's cooking and the child's there. Then with time, they'll want to cook. At first they'll get down and they'll play with stuff and like that. But after a while, then they'll be able to cook. You know what I'm saying? You're cleaning, they'll want to clean. Because when you're small, they know that they're small, they're taken care of, but they know that big people do something else. So they also want to help doing something because now they're a big boy. Right? Because big boys do this. Small boys don't, but I'm a big boy, so I do this. And so then that's good. It's encouraged. So whenever, in other words, if they don't do, don't worry about it. But if they do, that should be, that's the point. So then that opportunity has to be there. Does that make sense? So then that's how it's, that's why the concept that Grihastha life is just for sense enjoyment isn't progressive for anybody. Because the parents won't advance, children won't advance, and nobody, and the society in itself just becomes more degraded. But if the Grihasthas are interested in spiritual life and that culture, that spiritual development, and see the culture as important in using in Krishna service, then the whole society advances. So,
because the boys or children, they observe the satisfaction and not the happiness coming from it. So if you like cleaning, you are satisfied by cleaning. You will be happy if you clean something. Kids see that, I want to also do it because I want to be happy like you. And I see that the boys, like sometimes the boys run some shop during the Gaur Purnima. Some boys see it, and then they see just how much satisfaction is there. But there is a lot of hard work. Then next year, the boys, they want to also have the same satisfaction, and they are willing to go through the hard work, and they do quite well. So they are prepared for it, and you know, they can endure all that because they want to achieve that that happiness, the satisfaction. If the, you know, if it doesn't go so well, and it ends up, oh, I put so much energy put into it, and I'm not so much happy, then next year the boys are not so inspired because there is no satisfaction. So I'm not going to put so much energy into it. So it's very clearly defined, very easily.
Something else?
When somebody wants to establish a gurukula, they don't have qualified teachers, like you have a repertoire of knowledge and that they have, but they have the ashram side of it. Would it still be recommended that they still run the gurukula? Because
means they have the ashram side. They don't have the academic side. Yes, but then they have to develop that academic side because it's expected the kids will learn how to read and write and do these things. Because if you just turn out pure devotees and they can't read and write, somehow or another the devotees won't appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah, eventually, but the point is that it has to be that they're here because, as Pooh was pointing out, it's the mood that actually makes the school. It's not the technical points, it's not the ritual, it's not the academics, it's not the sketch. Those things are just supportive of. They're the medium through which you express. It's like cooking, if you have good pots and pans, it helps, but it's not cooking. Because you can have a fabulous kitchen, and the kitchen won't do anything. It's the cook who does something. Does that make sense? So if one understands how the character, how these things work, the mood, that's then what will happen. But these other things then are quite useful. So, yeah. So then they have to be parts. So then someone has to actually, the easiest is if someone grows up in the school and then they're involved in that, that will work the easiest. Or if not, then someone would have to come and spend enough time to catch that mood. Because it's not just what's being done, it's the mood. Because otherwise, go into another example. You do the 18-month MBA course, right? And you can do really top courses, right? And so in there, they'll teach you all the techniques that are used in business. But they will not, from that school, produce one businessman. Because that's a mood. That's not technique. And the businessman, there's a good chance if you take all the businessmen on the planet who are, you know, doing okay, they know how to do business, probably you would have to put a period and a zero or a couple of zeros, and then you can start putting numbers of what percentage of them, you know, have all that knowledge from academically learning it that is taught in the MBA. Right? Yeah, I'm not talking about here the Major League Basketball Association or baseball, right? You know, we're talking, you know, what do you call it? The business administration on the master's level, right? That one we're talking about. Just in case you wanted to know. is that okay? So the main point is it's association, because unless you have the proper mood, it doesn't work. Gurukul is a mood. Gurukul is not a curriculum. Right? Like that. Unless you want to just produce scholars. You have scholars, they'll produce scholars, but that doesn't necessarily go down so well. I've seen so many scholarly schools open and then close. And then the people from that never use what they're doing. Because it's not about changing their lifestyle, it's about simply educating in a particular branch of knowledge. So unless the teachers have that mood, it'll be hard. But if they catch that mood, then with time and work and with that, then they can establish whatever needs to be done. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. Last couple of mornings we were making a lot of about the group please preparing some food and we should encourage them because they go in that trust.
For preparing?
The guru coolies, they prepare food. In the last couple of mornings, they've been giving us announcements how the guru coolies are going to go on their
annual yatras.
Annual yatra.
Okay.
Parikram, can you tell us more about this? What is
the parikram?
Yeah.
See, it basically is that here we can create a particular environment and they'll get a lot of experience and all that. And it can be seen in our flavor of how we do it. And so, if you could say it's like a sophisticated, it's simple, but it's sophisticated. So someone from here could function in a village, someone from here could function in a city. Because we're not of the opinion that Varnashram is only a farm. Many of the Varnashram people, they think Varnashram only means farm. You don't have farms, there is no Varnashram. But we see from the Bhagavatam and Gita and all these, most of the people involved are city people. Yudhishthira Maharaj is a city person. Arjuna is a city person. So, and they're Kshatriyas, they follow their duties there. So then the training is they get that training in such a way where they can apply it, wherever. Because you learn the principle of cooking. Right now they're cooking on cow dung stoves, but it doesn't mean that they can't cook on a regular stove. Does that make sense? So that's the point. But if they just learn technically just the cooking, then you give a kitchen that they can't relate to, they can't function. So these guys could cook on, four bricks in a tin can. But they can also cook in a very nice kitchen. Right? So you have that wide range. But at the same time, is then much of the time it's thought, well, that's just Gurukul. And that's what you do in Gurukul. When you go out of Gurukul, maybe you do this, maybe you don't, the cultural aspect. So then by going out on these pilgrimages, then it has many aspects that it does. One of the things is it exposes them to the traditional life in India as it was. So we go to those places where that's happening. So it's still going on in India, even though people they talk about how it's modern and gone ahead and this and that. You still have people that are quite happy in that village environment. So they have the culture, they have that simplicity and everything like that. And they can see as whatever they do works there. And they also see the example of people living their lives according to it. It's not just in Gurukul. Right? So what we're meaning is they can apply the Gurukul education everywhere, but it's not necessarily by going everywhere you see the example. But how many people in the city are applying the Gurukul education? Right? So they just see people who grew up in the city and learned by the modern methods, and so they don't see it. So they'll have to go and do it themselves. But here you see them actually doing it. So when Prabhupada, I remember one discussion, it was all managers. I think there were, how many were there? Yeah, like 20 or more. And the discussion came, and the point that came up, what we're relating here, is I was bringing up some points of culture. And one of the leading devotees there says, but that doesn't happen anymore. People don't do that anymore. And I was saying, no, they do. Because all those things that Prabhupada mentions in culture, in Varnashram, and culture and behavior, that he mentions in all of his purports, except for the one where Prabhupada mentions about his mother, if she was going to go next door, she'd get into the horse cart, they'd push it out their gate and back into the neighbor's gate, and then she would get out so she wouldn't have to walk outside. That's the only one I haven't seen. But everything else that Prabhupada's mentioned, I've seen it all because we've been out in these environments. We've been into the homes. We've been in the cities, in the village, out in these places. We've seen them. But that room full of leaders, they hadn't seen one of them. So then they don't think it's very important. Well, we've seen it. We know it works. It's, therefore, it's important. Therefore, we apply it. That's what's mentioned here, is if you've seen it, then you know how to apply it. You haven't, you won't really figure it out. So the pilgrimage exposes them to that. So that's one of the main things, the cultural. Then you have another aspect, is because they're out on pilgrimage, they're going to be walking. So then, one, life slows down. It's simple. You go out, you do begging. You know, you get whatever's there, you cook that. You know, then when you're in one village, you're going to move to the next. You have too much stuff. You do a program for the village or give it to people who are poor. You ask the people in the village who doesn't have stuff. You know, you see that with nothing, you can live. You can have nothing. You can actually, like Shastra says, go live that simple lifestyle and people will give you stuff and you can support yourself. Rather than, no, if I don't have a degree and I'm not in the city and I don't have this and that, how will life will go on? Right? The big modern dilemma. But you see is that, no, it can go on with nothing. Like that. If you're a sadhu, you're spiritual, you're devotional, it will go on. Now, if you're totally materialistic, yes, you need a piece of paper. But if you're devotional, then anybody with culture, they like that. There's a million people with pieces of paper that you don't even want to know. But this, then they do. Plus, then that austerity, you're in a different place every time, you know, with nothing, just whatever you can carry yourself. So then you figure out that how much I actually need, I can actually pick up and walk off with it easily. In other words, I can walk 20 kilometers with whatever I need. If I can't walk with it, I actually have more than I require. So then they get the things that you can live simply. Then at Vanaprastha Sannyas, you can fall back on that. But if you come from, you have to have all facility, all this, you can't fall back on it. One of the major reasons that Vanaprastha is such a non-developed ashram in the movement is because people don't know what to fall back onto. Because they didn't see. They had austerities. They were in the temple. The tough brahmacharis, you know, eat a piece of wood for breakfast and spit out the pieces, you know, and spit on the girls, and, you know, that kind of stuff. But as far as being in the community, they wouldn't have a clue. But when you go out here, you see who you're staying with. You're staying with grihasthas. And you see how you see that simple life that you can do. And so it may, you know, part of the effect you won't see now. It won't be appreciated until they're 50. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is, as Krishna mentioned to Sudama Brahmana, that whatever we learned in the Gurukul, that's what makes our life work. So the Gurukul is not just some things that are there. It's training in a lifetime, for a lifetime. That's why it's so different. That's why it's means modern educators won't work with our system because they can't relate to it. They can't figure it out. I mean, literally. I've had something I'm explaining to to a group of devotees. You know, something like we're saying here, but in connection with the language and all that. Remember the other day we were talking about the breakdown of how language works and things like that. Everybody in the room understood it except a devotee who was a PhD in education. They could not understand it because that's not how it works. Not how it works according to their theory today. But the Vedic always works. You know, it's that how we teach mantras today is how they've taught it for millions of years. It works because it's according to the laws. The modern is not according to laws. It's according to their speculation, their feelings, their ideals. And so that's why then on the cutting edge, every 6 months is something new's coming out. On the state school, it's always 20 years behind. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that by exposing yourself to these things, they get a cultural experience that you will not get anywhere else. And then you can apply that anywhere in the world, in your life. Because behaving nicely, being accommodating, you know, being a good host, all these things like that, living simply, you can apply that anywhere. Anyone will appreciate it. Is that? Yeah, it makes sense. And then, as I mentioned, that the simplicity, they learn that I don't need much. Krishna will take care. Then the austerity of just walking, staying in a different place every time, right? Because you're used to, okay, we always stay here. But every time they're staying in a different place, different situation. You know, sometimes you're bathing in a river, sometimes in a pukkur, sometimes in a tap, sometimes you're in the shower. It's just, it's every time is different. So then you learn just not to be, it works. It's not that only this works. Oh, only if I have a rain shower, you know, with sufficient pressure, then you can take a shower. No, they can take out of a bucket or a tap. I don't know if you've ever seen it. I mean, bathing under a tap is pretty standard in India. You just turn on the tap, and because you squat, you get under the tap, and then you do everything. And it works really well because you get more water, you know, on you than a rain shower. It's actually better, but, you know, it's not as glamorous. You know? Like that. You understand? But then you have to know how to, you know. So you learn all these things. That means, remember, it was in Los Angeles. I think it was 79, I think it was. Been in India, then came back for something. And we were out on the sidewalk. So at least here, this kind of thing, you have street, then the curb. Right? Then you have grass, then you have the sidewalk, then you have the lawn, then you have the house. Right? So it's that kind of thing. And then they have sprinkler system. You know that little, those little ones that like pop up and just do that real low kind of thing so it doesn't get on everybody. And so while we were there talking with some devotee, someone came along with some Mahaprasad, ate the Mahaprasad. And then, you know, while we're still talking, I reached down and washed my hands on the sprinkler. And the other devotee that was there was shocked. Not that. How could you do that? It says, I never in a million years would have thought of that. For me, hands can only be washed in a sink. Right? I would have to walk, go into a building, stop the conversation, and go wash there. He says, I heard about this. I heard that devotees in India know how to use all things like that. And so here he saw the example. He was like, amazed. Is that so that was...
Or like drying cloth. No, you can just hang the clothes anywhere.
Huh? Yeah, yeah.
You go in the hotel room, put it over the TV.
Yeah, now TVs are really good. You don't get any creases. You can do your dhoti chadras. You know. The chairs, the lamps. Just make sure the top's screwed on. But yeah, you can just do anything anywhere. You know, railings, anywhere. You can hang. Because people don't think, no, unless you have a dryer, you can't dry clothes. You know, the dryer's broken. Now what do we do? You have to go to the laundromat, right? So that's the thing. You learn all these things. So these are all part of the things. You can say anything else. Or?
Yeah. Actually, what it does, it induces the mananam. You know, the boys, they learn something here. And they apply it in the same environment, and it's every day the same thing. And then, so they know it, but they don't know that they know it. Mm. But when they go out, then the situation changes. And now they have to think about, you know, how to deal with it. And they have to connect it to what they have learned in the school. And, you know, so the principle applies, is the same, but the detail changes and makes them actually more intelligent. So then they see how to apply it, not according to the details, but according to the principle. So that's what the environment does. That's like Mara was saying, you know, we travel and then, you know, every day it's some different situation. Like we would walk, and people very much appreciate the culture is there. So like many times we just get invited, and you know, people just please come, you know, and then okay, stay with us, and then prasad, and it's a very nice interaction, which they actually take as a, you know, very friendly, and. You know, these experiences for the boys are of immense value. It was one time it happened, 10-year-old boy. Okay, we would go and we would be begging for prasad, and then do fine. We would never ask for money. And then it was in Orissa, and then we would come to Remuna, Shira Shara Gopina. So and then entering Remuna, there was a market. I said, all right, boys, you go through the market and we can try, you know, beg some money you know, whatever, and then whatever we get, we can get kira for. So, and then we were begging and we got 312 rupees. Fine. Okay. We go to the temple. And then there is like here. Okay. So get kira for everyone and we got 1 kilo of chira. And so the kira for everyone was 300 rupees, chira was 12 rupees. And then, you know, 10-year-old boy, just after when we eat, wow, I'm convinced this is Krishna's arrangement. So even the small boy actually understood that it wouldn't happen otherwise. And again, we end up without money. But everybody got, you know, to full satisfaction. So when they realize that they can depend on Krishna, they don't have to do some other arrangement. That stays with them for life. I mean, even Srila Prabhupada, Ajamil was able to think of Narayan because of his practice of brahmacharya, you know, in his young age. So that's what the important is. So the parikramas, they only solidify the brahmacharya training.
How do you teach the chanting of the holy name?
How do you teach the chanting of the holy name? Well, Prabhupada mentioned that duties and that are something that they have to do. Spiritual activities is what you encourage. So you have a time when they're chanting, so you have to be there at the chanting, but whether they chant one round or get all 16 rounds, that's up to them. And then, you know, at extra time, you encourage. So most important is that you're doing it, there's a time for doing it, and you're always training them and teaching them why it's important. So a lot of times, especially when they go out on these parikrams, generally then they'll take a book or like that that's on some devotional aspect, like many years Harinam Chintamani or Madhurya Kadambini or these kind of small, that's something you can do in some weeks. And then you just go through and study all these things. So you walk, then you come to the place, you do your begging, you eat, then the afternoon you sit, you discuss these things like that. So then they hear that. And then at the assemblies, then this is always being discussed like that. And so, I mean, believe it or not, previously in the 70s, at least early 70s, in the 60s, Istogosti meant where you got together and discussed things about Isha. You know, about devotional service. So at least our temple, Istogosti was getting together, and then the president would read from Nectar of Devotion and then explain things and just go through, you know, so many pages or like that. And so that's what it was. Now it means a management, you know, kind of thing. But before it actually meant that. So you can just sit down, discuss these things, go through. So like that is how you do it. You have to train what you do it. You give opportunity to do it, and you train in why they should do it. Is that okay? Okay. So at 6 o'clock, the bell has rung. If we go any later, we run the risk of turning into a pumpkin. So we're going to end at this time like that. Okay, so thank you very much, everybody, for coming, taking part, showing interest in the Vedic educational program, for, you know, asking nice questions, listening, and all that. So we thank everybody for their involvement.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki,
Jai
Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.
Swamina Srila Bhaktivinoda Purna Maharaj ki. Thank you, Maharaj. I just want to ask the devotees who didn't give their contacts this morning to please give your contacts for future programs we are making. Many devotees, they were asking about adult education, so we can also send some advertisement for that. And we would also like to thank Sitaram Prabhu, who gave the donation for the feast we had for lunch today. Thank you very much, Prabhu.
Good evening.
Thank you everyone for coming, participating with us.
Okay.
And especially Maharaj Pritamishai.
Mother Mishai
who came to enlighten us here and to establish such a wonderful project for Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. I'll leave the book here, those who didn't get this.